Thanks for listening to Countdown to Kickoff. Now, 97.9 FM, WCHL Championship Sports, present The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee.
Larry Fedora and Bubba Cunningham are here, and they have taken football in another direction.
An old-school traditionalist. I want to go back to 8 members, including South Carolina.
Join us for the next hour of our pregame coverage as Art Chansky and internet legend Bob Lee discuss Carolina football and all the hot topics concerning college football here in town, across the ACC, and across the country.
Again, underneath to Morris. Morris at the 40, 35, 30. Romar's going to go. Go, Romar, go. Touchdown, Carolina.
I look more at how we do against institutions that I consider our comparables, and certainly Virginia would be in that.
Larry Fedora is Bill Belichickian in his approach to injuries.
The win today, particularly after last week, will help quite a bit, if only for the short term, before we have to face some other realities.
A win here, he becomes a hero to Tar Heel Nation.
Now, page 2 of 97.9 FM's exclusive Carolina football pregame coverage. The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee.
This is Art Chansky, and with Old Dominion comes the new horizon for Larry Fedora and his first bowl-eligible team at Carolina.
This is Bob Lee. Fedorians drive for 5 for the longest win streak since Choo Choo was throwing passes to Steve Streeter.
Is that true?
No.
Okay.
Next from WCHL Championship Sports, it's time for The Good Sports. Art C.
That is me.
And Bob Lee.
That's me.
And I'm Ron Seth. Today's Good Sports with Bob Lee and Art C. is coming to you live from Bailey Sports Grill at Rams Plaza as we count down to the Tar Heels game with the Old Dominion Monarchs. Good morning, Good Sports. What do you think?
Good morning, Better Sport. And how sporty are you with your football jersey and blazer over it? Did you get that from GQ?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, really. Well, we're excited. I'm back from being about 4,000 miles away, and I'm delighted to be back. Really excited about what the last 2 weeks of this season means for the Tar Heels, especially about our special guest today, personal favorite of yours and mine, Bob Lee, Johnny Swofford, the quarterback for the Tar Heels in the 60s and 70s. The AD for 17 years, and he was a real AD too, wasn't he?
He was a real AD.
Yeah, and of course he's the current commissioner of the ACC, and he'll be calling in. And I just have to tell you that we may not get to this, but I will never forget. John Swofford was a very, very good high school player. He was a not so good college player. He was kind of a backup quarterback to Paul.
Not so good. Can't you say he wasn't a great college player?
Nah, he was not great. So but anyway, he played every once in a while. They converted him to defensive back his fifth year. But they always tell a story about how when he went into the game and Bill Dooley would put his arm around his shoulder before sending him in the game, and he would say, "John, now John, you go out there and you run that right outside rollout pass. And don't you dare pass it."
Well, I think it's just perfect. You know, you said both you and I have known John for 40 some years. When he came out of North Wilkesboro, tousle-haired, little OP-looking Johnny Swofford. But I think it's perfect. He asked us a couple of weeks ago when he agreed to be on our show. He said, "Do you want me on for the ODU game or for the Duke game?" And I immediately saw to have him on the weekend of the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. It's like a national.
He didn't do it.
Wait a minute. It's a national holiday for conspiracy theorists, obviously. So who has been linked to more conspiracies than Johnny Swofford, who gets blamed for everything in the ACC? And I think he was with Abraham Zapruder on the grassy knoll, according to some people over on the Brickyard. But anyway, to have Johnny Swofford as our special guest today, we're going to have fun. I hope John has fun, but he knows you and I, and he knows anything goes, and it's going to be wild and woolly here in about 15 minutes.
Well, we could ask him certainly if he's going to stop at 15 with the ACC. We don't know.
He's already the longest tenured champion.
No. I'm talking about schools. Stop at 15.
Oh, I got you.
Okay. And how the heck did the Tar Heel football and basketball team end up playing at the same time today? It must be.
There's another question. It is a Swoffordian conspiracy. He's over there with D.B. Cooper and Amelia Earhart.
Well, we'll get to
Jim
John Swofford, who
Jim Knight, of course.
Just a fantastic guy, and he was was the AD in the golden era of Carolina. He hired Mack Brown. He was there when Dean Smith was in his greatest glory. And
he gave Dick Crum a lifetime contract.
He did.
And he's still paying on that, isn't he?
No, we're still paying on Butch, but not the Crummer. But, you know, the idea that John Swofford was here at that time when we won, if you go back, and, you know, some of the geeks in the Sports Information Office can whip this number right away. If you go back and you ask.
Was that a slam at Rick Brewer and
Dave Lowe? Oh, shut up. I'm not talking about those guys. You know that. If you go back and you add up the number of ACC championships that Carolina won when John Swofford was the AD for 17 years, I mean, the number dwarfs the number that we've won every year since then.
Just an advice. Don't use the word dwarf.
Okay. The number really is so much greater than – now, we're still a great athletic program and still, you know, in the whatever the cup is called these days and so forth, and still considered the best.
What is that? They don't even have that. It's the Carmichael Cup.
No, it's the Learfield Cup. It used to be the Carlisle Cup, but no.
No. We're different ones. The Learfield Cup is now the national.
That's the used to be
the old
Sears Cup. Right.
Yeah.
But it used to – well, the Carmichael Cup was the one that ranked all the ACC teams. That was years ago, but the number of ACC championships that Carolina won in John Swofford's tenure far outnumbers all of them that we've won since then.
Of course, 23 of those were Anson Dorrance when only three schools were playing women's soccer. But it doesn't count. It still counts. Hey, we love him.
Bust up my point, buddy. Bust it up.
I got a question. You're dodging the big question everybody wants to know, and that is, what were you and Pablo Escobar plotting down at Cabo when you were in Mexico?
Oh, my goodness. I wasn't in Pittsburgh last weekend. I was in Cabo for a wedding. It was like, let me tell you something. When I got there, it was like the seven somethings of Kevin Bacon. Okay. The groom was a dookie. The bride was an SMU grad. Her father was on the committee that hired Larry Brown. And he owns part of the Houston Rockets, which accounted for the tallest guest at the wedding, former Rocket Dikembe Mutombo. And
really?
You should have seen him on the dance floor.
Wow.
And the band. You know how far Cabo is? It's at the bottom of the Baja. The band at the bottom of the Baja, Kenny Mann and Liquid Pleasure.
No
kidding.
From right here in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, from Chapel Hill. We walked into the, you know, it was a 3-day wedding, Thursday night, Friday, Saturday. We walked into the grand final event, and there's Kenny Mann, and then he had like 12 people in his band, four women, guys I've never seen before.
Yeah.
They flew them all down the couple. We got to get Kenny on the show.
You're going to tell me that Doug Clark and the Hot Nuts did the reception dinner.
No, he couldn't make it.
And did Dikembe Mutombo block any shots while he was at the wedding?
No, but he's got some moves on the dance floor.
He's a tall guy. What is he, 7'2"?
He's about 7. Like his last team he played was for the Rockets. Anyway.
Right, now, segueing, you talking about having moves, and we're talking about history. Okay, Art, has Ryan Switzer already replaced Choo Choo as a living legend in Tar Heel football? Have they written a song about Ryan Switzer yet?
Well, let me give you the lead into that, okay? When they do,
I thought that was
and
a lead
Ron will be able to appreciate this. The name of the song will be Switzerland.
Or it could be, no, he's not! Yes, he is!
Go, Romar, go!
But
go,
that sounds
Ryan,
like a Bruce Springsteen song. Switzerland. Switzerland. Where are you, Switzerland?
What's the
line in the Springsteen?
we're losing control here. Quick, Stutz. Throw a lasso on the guy.
We have a football game coming up today, folks. Carolina and Old Dominion. And you're going to hear about it right here on WCHL. And let me get back to one thing that I want to say, because I may not get another opportunity to talk.
No, he's not. Yes, he is. Yeah. Say it.
Well, I may not get an opportunity to say this anymore today because you guys are on a roll. But I got to hand it to Art, because Art predicted a good while ago that Carolina was going to get on a roll, win the last six games in a row, and run the table. And so far, it's happened. We got Old Dominion today and Duke next Saturday, and you will be right, my
friend. That's right. And I want to say that. I want to remind you that after the disappointing Miami loss, when everybody was going to the whatever they were going to drink away the stars, my opening line in Chapel Bar Calm right after that game was, Tar Heel fans, make your bowl plans.
Yep.
we're going to win six in a row. We're going to run the table.
I remember when you said that. I have to give you credit.
All right.
I don't give you credit for much.
You give me credit for nothing. Nada. Bupkis. Absolutely. But thank you for that one.
I'll give you credit for walking us up to a break here. This is The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee on WCHL. I'm Ron Stutzwehr.
Oh, Switzerland.
In Rams Plaza. And we're getting ready for Carolina and Old Dominion.
Switzerland.
Right after this.
Switzerland.
Carolina football on 97.9 FM WCHL. Brought to you by Harrington Bank, Franklin Street Realty, UNC Healthcare, Fitz Lumber and Hardware, Cruisers Convenience Marketplace, Landscape Logic, AT&T Wireless, and by GEICO. Follow the action on your flagship station for Carolina football, 97.9 FM WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel station. Having a nice lawn is not impossible.
Our mission at Landscape Logic is to help you discover the possibilities for your landscape. We'll evaluate your landscape, prioritize your needs so that you can make a decision based on practicality or economics. We are qualified and committed to giving you the direction and care you need to create a finished and kept look for your landscape.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to visit LandscapeLogicNC.com. Landscape Logic, the logical choice for all your landscape needs.
I'm David Fitch of Fitch Lumber and Hardware. Just like on the basketball court, teamwork is what you need to take on any home project. Stop by and team up with Fitch Lumber and Hardware to score big on your upcoming goals. We can help. Get the local home court advantage at Fitch Lumber and Hardware, 309 North Greensboro Street in Carborough, or call us at 919-942-3153. And as always, thanks for your business and continuing to make Fitch Lumber and Hardware a family tradition.
And he hits Davis 40 yards downfield. Touchdown!
What a huge grab. Let's see that again in slow motion.
Going up, feet are inbounds, and he's pulling out his phone to get a free rate quote from GEICO?
So he could save hundreds of dollars on his car insurance.
While he pulls down the ball with the other hand. Phenomenal!
That was one for the highlight reel, folks.
GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
First down. Cardinals with the flea flicker. Gave it to Bernard. Back to Ritter. Deep to Tapley for the touchdown. And just like that, less than 90 seconds into the ballgame, the Tar Heels are up six.
Now, page two of 97.9 FM's exclusive Carolina football pregame coverage. The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee.
Broadcasting live from Rams Plaza, specifically right in front of Bailey Sports Grill. I'm Ron Stutz. Now back to the guys as we get ready for Carolina and Old Dominion.
Art, before we build our audience to a crescendo for Brother Swofford coming in from Grandover, I got to ask you, and I'm going to let you kind of ramble on this. You wrote a, well, I won't say incredible because all your stuff is incredible, and as is mine. But you wrote a great piece this week on Dean Smith and the World's Milky Way Galaxy Award for whatever. Comments from you on your piece. It was very good, by the way, folks, and I say that very sincerely.
Well, thank you. I mean, it was heartfelt for me. You know how I feel about Dean Smith, just sort of like everybody else does, but it's like, you know, when you're a Carolina fan under Dean Smith, you knew that there was Tar Heel Nation out there everywhere, but you felt like you were the only Carolina fan. Sort of like I feel when I watch the Red Sox. And the Red Sox Nation is everywhere, but I feel like I'm the only fan. But Dean Smith, and everything that was written about Dean Smith was about him being a basketball coach. And I'm very big fan of President Barack Obama, but I'm very disappointed in his remarks were mostly about him being a basketball coach. And that's not why he won the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He won it for everything he did off the court, for his humanitarianism, for the integrating the Carolina basketball program, for just standing up for causes that high-profile athletes and coaches never do. And that's why he's there. I mean, Mike Krzyzewski, Jim Boeheim, those guys aren't going to win the Presidential Medal of Freedom because as great a basketball coaches as they are, they didn't do what Dean Smith did. And to me, that's why I wrote about I didn't write about basketball. I wrote about how he came to Carolina and he didn't want to be a Southern Baptist because it wasn't inclusive. And he and Bob Seymour were at the beginning of the what is now the Binkley Baptist Church, was inclusive. And Dean Smith's assignment, there was an assignment for one of the congregation members of the church to run for the school board and become the swing vote on the vote for integrating schools in Chapel Hill. Dean Smith's assignment was integrate the Carolina basketball program. And the story of how he did it with Charlie Scott is phenomenal. And actually, it's going to be in a forthcoming book by Art Chansky.
You know what? I just want to say I agree with you 100% on that. And I tried to focus my remarks this week on the WCHL Morning Show about how he is so much more than just a basketball coach. So many things he did in this community that spread worldwide. I mean, the man is a true gentleman in every sense of the word and just a class act, and he's changed everybody's life.
Absolutely, and we all know he's ailing, and his whole family was there. Linnea accepted the award for him. His kids were there. Roy Williams was there. Bill Guthridge was there. But I do want to end this thing with a little levity. The Prez pulled out the old line about who's the only person who could hold Michael Jordan under 20 points. Well, for the record, Bob Lee, for the record, Jordan, as a sophomore, averaged 20 points for the Tar Heels. So Dean Smith did not hold
him under 20. Dean Smith and Dan Dakich.
Well, that was his junior year when he left, when he averaged 19.6 points. And because Dan Dakich held him down in that last game he played, he didn't average 20 points that year.
So Dan Dakich can be mentioned but in Coach the same sentence with Dean Smith. Oh, my gosh, we've just been told that little Johnny Swofford from Grandover is on the line. Are we ready for little Johnny Swofford from Grandover?
I know. We have to – I don't know. We have to –
You have to do a big drum roll.
I don't know. I'm nervous.
What we have to do.
I'm nervous. Get me a towel. My hands are sweating.
Do we need to sell something before we go crazy with John Swofford?
If that would make you guys feel more comfortable, we'll do that.
What? Sell something?
Should we sell the? How about let's go and sell the new ACC of 15 teams? Who's in it?
I don't know. Are we ready? Scotch, you're the ringmaster here.
All right. I'll tell you what. Why don't we take a quick break?
So we can have a nice long.
We'll talk to John Swofford, a long conversation with him, because I know that's what's going to happen.
Oh, boy.
You guys get on a roll.
Here we stand in Switzerland.
As we take our stand.
As we take our stand.
Sell something, and then Art and I and John Swofford will put on a show.
Absolutely. This is Ron Stutz along with Art Chansky and Bob Lee. This is WCHL's exclusive pregame coverage. Carolina and Old Dominion coming up 12 noon today in Keenan Stadium, and we'll be back with John Swofford right after this.
You may already know that AT&T is the nation's fastest 4G LTE network. And now, independent third-party research has confirmed that AT&T is also the most reliable 4G LTE network. But what does that mean for you? Whether you're connecting with family and friends, getting the job done at work, or simply looking for entertainment, you want a wireless network you can count on. That's why AT&T built the nation's fastest 4G LTE network. And we're not the only ones saying it. PC Magazine recently ranked AT&T's LTE network as the fastest overall, and PC World stated that AT&T's LTE service is the fastest 2 years running. Not surprisingly, that same lightning-fast network is now the most reliable as well. AT&T, the nation's fastest and now most reliable 4G LTE network. Rethink possible. AT&T reminds you to never text and drive. It can wait.
Speed claim based on national carrier's average 4G LTE download speeds. Reliability claim based on data transfer completion rates on nationwide 4G LTE networks. 4G LTE not available everywhere.
I'm David Fitch of Fitch Lumber and Hardware. Just like on the basketball court, teamwork is what you need to take on any home project. Stop by and team up with Fitch Lumber and Hardware to score big on your upcoming goals. We can help. Get the local home court advantage at Fitch Lumber and Hardware, 309 North Greensboro Street in Carrboro, or call us at 919-942-3153. And as always, thanks for your business and continuing to make Fitch Lumber and Hardware a family tradition.
1 in 5 Americans will develop skin cancer in their lifetime. Central Dermatology Center treats cancers where it is important to conserve tissue and high-risk areas such as the ears, face, hands, and feet. Mohs micrographic surgery is a highly effective technique and can be covered by most insurances, including Medicare and TRICARE. Dr. Beth Goldstein has been specializing in Mohs surgery since 2008. If you're concerned about a non-healing spot or a changing mole, make an appointment at Central Dermatology Center. Find out more at centralderm.net.
7 seconds on the play clock. Big third down here. Carolina trying to take the lead. Shotgun snap to Renner. He drops straight back. Plenty of time. Goes to the end zone. Ebron sweeps catches it for six. What a play by the Tar Heel tight end.
Now, page two of 97.9 FM's exclusive Carolina football pregame coverage. The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee.
As we get ready for Carolina and Old Dominion at Kenyon Stadium today, they'll kick it off at 12 noon. This is Ron Stutz along with Art Chansey and Bob Lee.
All right, folks, we have a very, very special. All of our guests are special. This one is very special. And this week I promoted his appearance on today's show on my website, which, as Art is always reminding people, kind of crosses over fan bases, unlike our show here, which is primarily for Carolina fans. My website is read by fans all across the ACC. And I asked my readers for comments of things they would like to ask John Swofford. And unfortunately, I got a lot of them from NC State that are not only anatomically impossible, they're not appropriate for a family show.
But how can they – they can't read the ones from NC State. How can they read your
crayons? It was crayons on a big pen. Okay. But anyway, but I got one from a very special friend of John's and of ours, Jim Hevner. And I've got to open up with John, if you're ready for this one. Hevner says, God bless him, said, you got to ask him about the Ed Sullivan show. I say, Jim – his career for the last 40 years has included a few highlights beyond the Ed Sullivan show. Please, Jimmy. No, you got to ask him about the Ed Sullivan show. So here's the question, folks. Everybody knows that in 1970-71, Johnny appeared in the Ed Sullivan show because of his brother, Oliver. And Ed Sullivan, from the stage, introduced Johnny and mentioned an accomplishment he had had in a recent game. My question for you, Johnny and Art and Ron, is who was the opponent that he mentioned in the game that Johnny Swofford played that week? John, do you have that answer?
Do I have that answer?
What was the opponent that Ed Sullivan referred to when he introduced you?
Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt, oh. Absolutely. Wow. God love you.
What a great memory.
You've never been introduced that way, Swofford, I guarantee you.
Hey, Swoff, was that the game where Dooley said, Swoff, you go out there and run that rollout pass and don't you dare pass it. Is that that game?
No, he let me throw it that game. I threw it pretty well that game, but there were too many others that I didn't throw it very well. That was another
John,
game told me to call pass-run options, but pass was not an option.
John, welcome to the show. We thank you so much, and I promise you one thing. You'll never be on another radio show like this for the rest of your commissionership, so let's have
Which
some
may
fun.
Not be very long.
I can tell that already.
Great to have you, my friend. He and I first met at the East-West High School All-Star Game in about 66 or 67, weren't you and Leo in the same game?
We were in the same game. Wes Jessen was in that game, too. They were on the East team, and I was on the West.
There you go. East-West All-Star Game in Greensboro.
Well, let's start off, John. Tell us how you're doing. How's Nora? How are your kids? I understand Autumn is a secret agent for the FBI. Is that right? So just tell us a little bit about how you're
not
doing.
Not exactly, but actually she's transferred to motherhood and has our two little, only two grandchildren we have, little girls that are both terrific and have their granddad wrapped around their finger, as you would expect. But everybody's doing well, Art. I appreciate your asking.
Well, I know you're doing well, and you can't seem to stay out of the news. The ACC is at 15. Is it 15 and holding, or is it 15 and counting, or is it 15 and tell us what you think?
Well, I think it's 15 and holding. I think we're in a really good place as a league with the 15 that we have, and I think it's positioned us extraordinarily well for the future in today's world of college athletics and solidified the ACC's place as one of the Power Five conferences. And so I think we're set for a good while. We've extended our television agreements with ESPN. We have a grant of media rights from all 15 member institutions, and which is makes things about as solid as they can be. And it's a great group of schools with a terrific footprint. We've got a footprint where we have a larger population in our footprint than any other conference in the country, and obviously that's good for a lot of reasons. And now we're certainly true to our name in terms of being the Atlantic Coast Conference, running from Boston to Miami, and I think the addition of Louisville next year as a member will only strengthen our conference. So I think the league's in a great place.
Well, you know, I used to bug you a few years ago about, and 15 is a good number. I was thinking more 18, but I used to bug you about, remember the three divisions? I said, let's go to three divisions, and you have three champions and a wild card, and then you can have semifinal Saturday and go to the championship game. And so I know we're not going to do that. We're fine in football with these two divisions. But how is the basketball coach, without divisions, going to explain to recruits how and why his team finished 15th in the ACC last year? I mean, that's going to be a challenge. Someone's going to finish 15th, and how is that coach going to go into a home the next day and say, you know, we finished 15th this year. We're shooting for 14 or 13 next year.
Well, when you do that, you don't talk about last year or this year. You talk about
All right, John, I got a question for you. Now, I am an old traditionalist. I'm fine if we went back to eight, including South Carolina, but I accept the fact that that's not likely to happen in today's society.
You are an old traditionalist.
I am an old traditionalist.
Mostly old.
All right, but I got a question. The big thing that people complain about is the loss of rivalries, particularly in football, and I understand the mathematical permutations that you can't play 14 teams and so, you know, how do you do it. But suppose Ron Wellman and Bubba Cunningham got together and say, we're going to play each other every year in football, but four of those 5 years aren't going to count as a conference game, but we're going to play them anyway. And if Debbie Yao and what's-his-name at Duke did the same thing, if they said, we want to play you every year because our fans care about it, but it'll only count to Grandover every 5 years. Is that possible?
Dr. Kevin White to you, who makes $990,000,
right,
which is almost as much as you
You're
make
giving
for
Johnny
doing
time
this show.
To think of an answer okay, for right. this question. What about it, Swafford?
Yes, that is possible. That's up to the institutions. If there's nothing from a conference regulation standpoint that would prohibit that. If
wow!
Two schools within the league are not scheduled in a particular year, and they want to schedule each other as a non-conference game, they may do so.
Well, that has happened in the past. I don't know what year, but I know it has happened in the past occasionally. But that would be great, Johnny, because we know that attendance and the threat of TV and everything like that is affecting college football right now, and ADs have to really think out of the box about things. And, you know, a lot of people, it's not a conference game, but Carolina's still playing Wake Forest, it's still a heck of a rivalry. So that's something that realistically Bob Lee might could buy. Do you have
I can see my column this week. Johnny Swafford and I were talking, and we came up with this idea.
Wait, do you have an opening for an assistant commissioner for bizarre scheduling? Do you have that opening? Because I got the man right here who can do it.
Not at the moment.
I think that's a great idea.
That could open up as soon as next week, I think.
No, I mean, to me, that's the only real problem with the mathematics of the scheduling is that we don't play Wake Forest, and certainly with the problems, and this is another question for you, the threat of TV being so wonderful and the technology and the graphics that it is starting to mean empty seats in stadiums, and Bubba's agreed to that, Norwood Teague, all my friends around the country say, yeah, it is a real issue. Can you speak to that issue, John?
Well, it is an issue, and it's an issue nationally, not just among our schools. It's a national challenge, and it's affecting the NFL. And I think we all know if it's affecting the NFL, it's probably affecting every other sports entity in the country. With the technology and the quality of the picture, the size of the picture. There's no question, and I think what we need to do collegiately is to do everything we can to enhance the in-stadium experience that fans have, and obviously the best solution to all kinds of attendance issues is to win a lot of games and play a quality schedule. But I think it has to go beyond that in terms of keeping up with technology, making technology a part of the game day experience and to compete with television sets, quite frankly, and the quality of the television experience in today's world. So,
you know, my wife loves the yellow line. My wife loves the yellow line. She won't watch a football game without the yellow line, the first down line.
Yeah.
But the fact that not only is a game greater, I can go home tonight and I can see six different games, and I don't even have a package. But with cable TV, I can watch six different games today. I mean, that's great.
There's no question about that. It sounds like our we've got a command center here in Greensboro at our offices. It is an unbelievable place to be on a game day, and which is where I'll be today, actually. In the early time frame, we have 7 games on television today, and in the command center, I'll be able to sit there and watch all 7 of them at once. Which is a
can lot we come fun. Over? Can we come over? Can Bob Lee and I come over? Are you serving lunch? Can we come over?
We're not serving lunch, and we're sold out in the command center. We've got a sellout in the command center, but it is seriously, it's a terrific place. But you know that, and not you know most people don't have 7. Screens in their living room or their home theater, but you know you can see so much on a. I see a lot more, you know, in my job. I mean, when I don't go to a game, I see much more in terms of our league from a television exposure standpoint, from an officiating standpoint, from you know team play standpoint. Evaluating all of that. At our command center than I do when I actually go to a game. Although I, as a fan, there's nothing like being at a game, in my opinion, and hopefully that will always be the case. But, you know, we've got to look at it, you know, in a very progressive way and how we can enhance the in-game experience as well as how we schedule, because that certainly comes into play too with fans.
Well, Johnny, you know, you just talk about Wi-Fi-ing all the stadiums. The NFL is trying to Wi-Fi the stadiums. They're going to show the red zone on the big screens. But that, and that, in one hand, it enhances the game day experience for the fan. Like, you know, Michigan hired the Domino's pizza guy or the Pizza Hut guy as their AD and with a real business mind. But when you do all that stuff, it enhances the fan experience, but it takes away from their attention to the game. And, you know, for years when you were AD, there was always a frustration all the way up through Mack Brown about why we had such a beautiful campus and a beautiful stadium and a beautiful pregame atmosphere with the fraternities and sororities partying. People said, oops, it's time to go to the game. Oh, we'll get there by the middle of the first quarter. And that is something that has always been a problem at Carolina. It still remains a problem. And I don't think unless you get to the top 10 for 4 or 5 years in a row and everybody wants to get there 45 minutes before the game, it's going to remain a problem. But all of these things that you do to enhance the fan experience, it could also take away from their attention to cheering for the team at the stadium, don't you think?
Well, it could. And I think, too, Art, as a part of the conversation in referencing the NFL or the NBA or whoever it might be and some of the things that they do, college sports are different, I think, and the college game day experience is different than an NFL game day experience, and I think we need to recognize that as well, because it is unique. There's nothing like it in the world in terms of you know, colleges and alums coming back to campus and all the things that go with that. So we're not exactly like the NFL and don't want to be, or the NBA, with all due respect to the great success that those two leagues have. We have to recognize what we can emulate there and also recognize that we're different at the same time.
John, you used a word a few minutes ago that kind of segues into this. I've been studying for the last 15 years on the Internet the lunatic fringes of the various fan bases across America. And there is one thing that all the lunatic fringes, and I didn't create that word, I call them board monkeys, that they all agree on, and that is that their particular conference has the worst officiating in America. Every conference's lunatic fringe seems to take pride in the fact, in sort of a weird way, that they have the worst officials. And of course, the fans hating the umpire and blaming the officials has been happening since they first played a competitive game in anything. Speak to the question of officiating, which, again, you get blamed for because you're the commissioner. Go.
Well, first of all, when I go to meetings with my colleagues, other commissioners, that it's funny you say it that way, Bob, because they, you know, we've had conversations where there'd be 5 or 6 of us together, having a meal or talking about officiating, and everyone would say, well, our fans think we have the worst officiating, and somebody else would say, well, our fans think we do, and it, so you're right on target there, I think. I think officiating is simply a target wherever you are, and fans being fans, they're going to look at officiating through whatever color glasses they see them through in terms of their team's color, and that's part of being a fan and part of being passionate about it. So I don't think you ever totally get away from that. But I think that our league, like every league in the country, is going to continue to do everything you can possibly do to have the very best officiating that you can possibly have. And I think some of the, instant replay, as aggravating as it was when it began a few years ago in football, has greatly enhanced getting the call right. There's still some that are arguable, but the vast percentage of calls, and we have people evaluate our officiating that are outside of our own league. We have our own people evaluating it on an ongoing basis, but we also have people outside of our league that are disassociated from our league evaluating officiating. And the vast percentage of calls that are made are correct and accurate, but those are human beings out there on the field, just like the players are human and the coaches are human, and players make some mistakes and coaches make some mistakes and officials make some mistakes, and I don't think there's any way you totally eliminate that, although that is the goal. And I think the technology that we now have within our office and most of the other conferences have something similar, it gives us extraordinary capabilities to evaluate our officials and through that evaluation train our officials going forward. So I think with instant replay and the evaluation and training that goes on, I think it's better than it's ever been, and it'll probably never be perfect. Just like the players and coaches aren't going to be perfect on a game day, but your goal is to reach that perfection.
You know, the two stories that dominated the 24/7 sports networks this week were the two officiating calls, the Drew Brees call against San Francisco, and of course the Panther last play of the game with the Patriots. And
the mugging of Gronk. You're talking about,
yes,
right?
The mugging of Gronk, as our Patriot fan here would say. And you show that so many times from so many angles, and obviously, as you say, everyone sees it through their own colored lenses and are adamant that what they saw is what happened. And that's again, that's classic sports fan.
Well, it is. That's part of that's part of the beauty of sports, I guess, and then people's intrigue with it. And I don't know that you can ever totally eliminate that. I don't think you can, but you want to reach for that level of perfection. You want to officiate the perfect game, if you can ever do that, just like you'd want to play the perfect game or coach the perfect game. Us all being human beings, that none of that probably ever happens, but as I said, you want to get as close to it as you can and constantly make progress in terms of how you train your officials, how you choose your officials, and how you evaluate your officials.
Johnny, let me switch subject here a little bit. You were blindsided by Maryland leaving the league a little bit, and I know you're a little bit PO'd about that, but you recovered beautifully by getting Louisville to come in, and this is Maryland's last year in the league. As time has passed and you've analyzed that, you were an AD for 17 years. Do you understand the position that the Maryland AD and president were in as far as the financial condition of their athletic department to make such a move like that? As a businessman detached from the ACC commissioner, having been a former AD, haven't been in that position, but can you understand, does it make more sense to you now what Maryland did?
No, I don't. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. That's Maryland's decision to make and which they have made, and they have that prerogative to do that. You know, I think when schools are evaluating where the best fit is for them from a conference standpoint, there are a lot of things to consider, and certainly the financial aspect is an important part of that. But I don't think that can be the only part of it. And so there are a lot of things that go into a school's financial position that go well beyond a conference membership. I mean, you need to be in a situation where you are healthy athletically in every way, regardless of what conference you're in. And if being in a certain conference can enhance that, that's great. But I think in our case, as evidenced by the number of schools who have wanted to be a part of the ACC over the last decade and have recently joined us, I think that it's obvious that this collection of schools can be very successful in every way, competitively, academically, as well as financially, and all of that goes together as a group. But schools also need to be very healthy, in their own skin, so to speak, and that's what that combination is what makes an institution strong and its athletic program and a conference when you have a collection of those kinds of institutions.
John, I made reference, kind of a humorous reference when we started this, to something, and I know you can handle this question, so it's not a gotcha. When you're getting together with your old classmate Jim Delaney, who oddly the two classmates that each of you are in a similar position, he is commissioner of the Big Ten, and I'm sure Jim probably gets a lot of flack from some of his member institutions that he favors Ohio State and Michigan because they're the two behemoths in the Big Ten. I'm sure Mike Slive in the SEC gets flack because they think he favors Alabama because they're or Kentucky in basketball. But you're in a unique situation. The fact that you came up through as an alumnus and the AD at a member institution, if you had it all to do over again, would you have preferred to be commissioner of the Southeastern Conference or the Pac-10 or something? It was kind of a can't-win, can't-lose situation for you. Can you address the Johnny Swafford favors Carolina and hates State question? And if you're not comfortable with it, I understand, but I think you probably are.
Oh no, I'd say a couple of things. First of all, in regard to your last reference, I think again it gets back to fans, and this is not a criticism; it's just an observation. I think fans are going to see things through, through their particular school colors, and that in most ways is a really good thing. I think that what gets transferred though is, people think that when you're in a job like this, you're a fan, but you're not a fan of a particular institution. And yes, I had a great experience at Carolina, and wouldn't trade my years there for anything. But we were a part of the Atlantic Coast Conference the entire time I was there as a player or as an athletic director, and I always loved the ACC. I grew up with it. Watched my brother play football at Duke. My first job was at Virginia. So my entire career, playing and administratively, has been in the Atlantic Coast Conference. And I grew up as a kid watching ACC schools. Most of the schools I considered when I was being recruiting were ACC schools. I've always had great respect for the traditional academic athletic balance that this league has portrayed, and so you don't, when you're sitting in this chair, you understand one of the great things about the job I'm in is it gives you tremendous respect
and an understanding of and a knowledge of all of the institutions that are in the league. And, you know, I'm not competing against any of those institutions. They're all part of who we are. And I want each and every one of them to be successful in every way that we can, and as many of them to be successful as possible, because that simply enhances our conference. So I don't look at this as pulling for one school against another. I look at it as we want as many of our schools as possible to have as great a success as they can possibly have, because that simply strengthens all of us. So you look at it and you deal with it from a collective point of view, not from an institution versus institution point of view. And as I said, you learn to appreciate very quickly the qualities that all of our institutions have and the tremendous qualities that they have. So you're trying to make everything as strong as possible in a yeah. collective sense. And to answer your question, would I rather have been the commissioner of the SEC or another league rather than the ACC? The answer is definitely, for me, no, not at all.
And, Johnny, that's why we're all rooting here in Chapel Hill. We're rooting with every fiber of our body for the Duke Blue Devils to make the Orange Bowl. Would you believe that?
No, I would not believe that. That's all part of the beauty of competition and the rivalries that go on.
Can you imagine, John, when you started 16 years ago, what were the odds that you would be commissioner when not only would Wake Forest win the conference and play in the Orange Bowl, but Duke would be bowl eligible 2 years in a row? What were those odds 16 years ago?
Well, balance was that was on your platform, wasn't it, John? Balance, a balanced league.
Well, I think in a lot of ways those things are very good for the league in the sense that it shows that, with the right kind of effort, the right kind of circumstances, the right roll of the ball, everybody has a fair chance to reach the top. And I think that gives every program the hope of doing that, every fan base the hope of doing that. And, you know, in a lot of ways, that's what this is all about.
Well, obviously we're rooting hard for Duke to get the Orange Bowl. We also think it's wonderful that Mike Krzyzewski has been the Olympic coach for the last three Olympiads. It doesn't give him any recruiting advantage of all, as we know. So in Chapel Hill, we're all really happy here about what's going on. And the last thing I'm going to ask you, Bob, before we let you go, and you've been so kind to spend with us, Bob mentioned Delaney. You were classmates at Carolina. You were a football player. He was a basketball player. Neither of you were particularly great at your sports, but you were great competitors.
What a wonderful thing to say.
Now two of you are the most powerful men in college athletics. So were you friends back then, and what's your relationship like now? I mean, is it mud wrestling, or is it free throw shooting, or field goal kicking? I mean, it's got to be a tense situation between you two old buddies every once in a while.
Well, yeah, I have a lot of respect for Jim. We didn't know each other that well, or spend much time with each other when we were both in school. We obviously knew of and knew each other, but Jim's a lot older than me. He graduated a year ahead of me, so he's a lot older than I am.
Well, he looks a lot older.
Jim's had a terrific career, and I have great respect for the job that he does. And we work together on a lot of things, including currently looking at the NCAA governance changes that could potentially be brought about, and the way things have evolved. I spend a lot of time with the other four Power Conference commissioners and with Larry Scott and Bob Bowlesby and Mike Slav and Jim. There are a lot of things that we, as much as our conferences are in competition with each other, there are also a lot of things that it's important that we do together. And in my 17 years in this job, the things we do together has actually increased rather than decreased over that period of time, and certainly the change in conference memberships and affiliations have added to that. So it's been a it's been a changing landscape, particularly over the last decade or so, last 10 or 12 years, and that is necessitating even more change with the national governing body, I think, and that's something that we work very closely together in trying to bring about in a positive way.
Johnny, thanks so much for being with us. I hope you'll be here in Chapel Hill next year when Duke drives for the ACC Championship and the Orange Bowl and Carolina tries to stand in its way. But you've been great to take your time with us. The command center is sold out. There's no lunch. We won't be there. But you've been just great.
I'm still impressed that you remembered Vanderbilt from 40 years ago. I'm impressed, Swafford.
Johnny, thanks so much, and we'll see you along the road very soon. And again, we so much thank you for your time to be with us today on The Good Sports.
Yeah, thank great you, to be with, all right. Great to be with both of you, and hope the Tar Heels will become bowl eligible today.
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you, buddy.
You've been listening to John Swafford, the commissioner of the Atlantic Coast Conference. I'm Rod Stutz, along with Bob C. and or Bob Lee and Art C. I just get these two mixed up. They look so much alike. We'll come back in just a moment with
as
a two-minute drill.
Our stand
in jungle land.
Switzerland.
All right. We're coming back. Bailey Sports Grill. That's where we are. Rams Plaza, WCHL, Carolina, and Old Dominion coming up. We'll be back after this.
At Harrington Bank, it pays to be a customer. As your local community bank, we are working on the best ways to earn you more money, which is why we offer competitive CD rates. Call or stop by one of our three convenient locations in Chapel Hill to learn which account is right for you. We are located in Southern Village, Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and the intersection of Highway 54 and 40. Harrington Bank, you deserve banking like this.
You may already know that AT&T is the nation's fastest 4G LTE network. And now, independent third-party research has confirmed that AT&T is also the most reliable 4G LTE network. But what does that mean for you? Whether you're connecting with family and friends, getting the job done at work, or simply looking for entertainment, you want a wireless network you can count on. That's why AT&T built the nation's fastest 4G LTE network. And we're not the only ones saying it. PC Magazine recently ranked AT&T's LTE network as the fastest overall, and PC World stated that AT&T's LTE service is the fastest 2 years running. Not surprisingly, that same lightning-fast network is now the most reliable as well. AT&T, the nation's fastest and now most reliable 4G LTE network. Rethink possible. AT&T reminds you to never text and drive. It can wait.
Speed claim based on National Carrier's average 4G LTE download speeds. Reliability claim based on data transfer completion rates on nationwide 4G LTE networks. 4G LTE not available everywhere.
This is The Good Sports with Art C. and Bob Lee. I'm Ross. That's Bailey Sports Grill in Chapel Hill and broadcasting live on WCHL. Let's go to the two-minute drill, folks. You ready?
Absolutely.
First of all, first question. How many victories will the UNC basketball team have after the ACC tournament?
I'm saying 19.
19?
Oh, I thought you. I thought the question that Bob Lee posed was, how many victories will Carolina, how many opportunities will Carolina have to win after the ACC tournament? And I'm not so sure, you know, because the Tar Heels look like they may be part of that Wednesday opening act for Scotty McQuarrie, which is the ACC's way, and we should ask Swafford this, of begging people to come out for the first day of the new 15-team tournament. Bob Lee?
Yes, sir.
You're a hardwood connoisseur. What do you think of the Tar Heels at this point? At this very moment, they're getting ready to play Richmond in the Hall of Fame.
As we always talk about, I expand beyond the Carolina fan base, and the big question against across the triangle this week was, who is the biggest basketball juggernaut, Belmont or North Carolina Central, since they both came into the triangle and laid waste? Now, yesterday, I was with our buddy Henry Hinton on his radio station, and we talked about, suppose Jeff Lebo had gone into Cameron and beaten Duke, would this have been the week that was in triangle basketball?
Well, he almost did.
Right.
You know, the idea, first of all, you're not going to beat almost any team when you miss 26 out of 48 free throws.
We laid enough bricks in that game Belmont, to turn Franklin Street into a pedestrian
wall. Belmont is a very good team. They've been a good team for several years, even when they made that Cinderella run in the NCAA tournament. But we've talked about this before. If Carolina is Carolina basketball, you beat Belmont, you beat Richmond, you beat every school on your schedule that you're supposed to beat at the beginning of the year. This is not a typical Carolina basketball team. It is going to have a very long season unless P.J. Hairston comes back. Leslie McDonald is really, to me, he's a role player. It's P.J. Hairston is the one. And even with P.J., it's an issue.
Now, when you got fans leaving the lower level saying Matt Daugherty and Binghamton as a comparison, you know it was a rough night in the Dean Dome.
Well, yeah, and you don't want to compare Matt Daugherty to a Hall of Fame coach, but when you have a season where you lose games like this at the beginning, it's a warning sign, and people start looking at your record and saying, how many do we need to get into the NCAA tournament, and so forth and so on.
We're not going to compare this to Chaminade beating Ralph Sampson, though.
No, but it'll be interesting. I don't think the Tar Heels can beat Louisville without P.J., but they need to beat Richmond today. I mean, if they were to lose to Richmond, and Richmond's always traditionally a good team. So
how many fans are going to be in Kenan with their radio listening to the Richmond game?
Well, it's not on the radio. Exactly. They have to have their device logged in to GoHeels.com, listening to the game on the Internet while watching a football game. Or like, we could go to a...
You were supposed to ask Swofford about that.
I know.
Did we do that?
I don't know.
Well, and it's on ESPN 3.
We could go to a sports bar and watch on...
Like Bailey's.
Yeah, exactly. Like Bailey's and watch on contiguous next TVs next to each other. We could watch...
Stunts, you like how we do that, Stunts?
Carolina amazing. And Richmond on ESPN 3. We could watch the Tar Heels and ODU on whatever... Rabbit Ears Network, that game is on. And we could also watch Duke and Wake Forest, which is really an important game in the ACC this year.
Is this the first time in history that Carolina has played a football and basketball opponent from the state of Virginia at the same time?
It's the first time that they've ever played a football and basketball opponent at exactly the same time.
Plus, they're both from Virginia.
Yeah, no, it's the first time they've ever played
anybody
a football and basketball game at the same time against anybody. But anyway,
okay. Well, let's bring it back to football now. What everybody's been talking about Carolina's bowl aspirations. Carolina wins today; they become bowl eligible. But what kind of a bowl are we talking about here?
We're trying to avoid Shreveport.
We're avoiding Shreveport. If we win today and we win next week against Duke, which would be great, we'd knock Duke out of the Orange Bowl. We'd knock Duke out of it's a five-way tie. If it turns out to be a five-way tie,
yeah.
5-3 with five teams. Virginia Tech wins the tiebreaker because they have the best record amongst the mini group. Carolina is out of that because they have the worst record amongst the mini group, which would be Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Carolina, Miami.
Now, speaking of bowl games, there's going to be one today over in the Carter. The Bojangles Bowl of NC State playing their bowl game against the Purple People.
Yeah, I figured you'd get that in. But I think the bowl game that Carolina will go to would be a very good
one. The Bojangles Bowl. You like that one, Stutz?
How about the Pinstripe Bowl in Yankee Stadium?
Oh,
the ACC versus the Big Ten.
That sounds good.
Yeah, that would be
Mario Rivera coming out of the bullpen.
I like that. Hey, listen, we got less than a minute here. Game score predictions. What do you think is going to happen, Bob Lee?
45-28, Fedorians.
All right, Art.
I like the Tar Heels by 3 touchdowns as well. I don't care whether Drew Brees or Bruce Springsteen plays quarterback because. You know what we're going to do today? We're going to take our stand in Switzerland.
Is Ryan any kin to Barry?
I don't know if there's an Oklahoma connection there or not. But Carolina and Old Dominion getting ready to get it on today, 12 noon. That's kickoff time in Kenan Stadium. And we have an hour-long pregame show on the network between now and then.
Maybe best show ever today, Chansky. Best show ever.
Well, I don't know, Bob. You said
you didn't have ball biz. I know. Ball biz was good.
I have ball biz. Hey, this is Art Chansky, and I'll be talking to you on WCHL and writing to you on chapelbar.com.
And I'm going to write about this great scheduling in the ACC that John Swofford and I came up with today. Oh, boy, BobLeeSays.com.
And I'm Ron Stutz. I'll see you on the radio. Carolina and Old Dominion on the way next.